As the bull marches on, are the tail risks still a big deal?
This is Jerry Toome with Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Toome. Jerry Toome is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Toome Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station, or its management, or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Toome. This is Michael Williams. Well, Jerry, the market just keeps trying to creep up and up and up. At the same time, a bunch of the leading economic indicators are still pointing down. So are these tail risks still a big deal? What do we make of this?
And are they tail risks at all? That's one of the things we talked about in the last couple of shows, the difference in a black swan and a tail risk. And we probably ought to explain that at some point in time. But right now, if you just look at the surface, everything looks great. The leading index, economic indicators, all the things that point to recessionary territory are still, almost all of them are still negative. We do have one exception of one that's turned around. We'll talk about all those in a moment. So is this okay, Jerry? You're a broken record. You're a broken record twice. You're a broken clock. You're right twice a day. No, probably not. Here's kind of the deal. It's a setup, and it's a really strange thing. We talked about last week at length, really the first half of the whole show, we talked about how the index, the employment numbers came out astoundingly high in comparison to history. And most of the analysts, not most, all of the analysts that we take who are not paid by the government, by the way, they're not paid by the left, they're not Democratic strategists, they are independent analysts. I don't even know what their flavor is. I assume most of them are probably Republicans just because Republicans tend to go into higher levels of business, but not always. But essentially, every single one of them expressed either very mild but leading indicators of saying, hey, we are not sure we trust these numbers, out to these numbers are totally bogus, and it's a we're getting recessionary numbers in hindsight. So we're not going to go into that much detail on today's show, but I am going to cover another one, which deals with a guy named Peter Berzin, who's one of the top analysts for bank credit analysts. But before I do that, let's talk about the economy. One of the things we do want to do on today's show, we got some new information we need to recover. We have not talked about certain topics in a while. Number one, we haven't talked about oil in a while. Mm-hmm. Number two, we've not talked about gold in a long time or China. And I think in the second half of the broadcast, we need to deal with all three of those topics because these are actually big deals. It's so easy to get caught up in the short-term headlines and the news and, oh, the market's doing this, the market's doing that. You know, bonds, I think, are going to be disastrous in the coming decade or so. So we don't really spend much time. We're not going to spend much time on that. But let me cover first some things on the economy. What's going on? We'll talk about the potential for black swan, which actually couldn't be labeled textbook black swan anymore because it's now a known known. It is a risk. You can call it a tail risk. Right. Difference in a tail risk and a black swan, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Statistician, but a black swan is something completely out of the blue that no one was anticipating and couldn't have been anticipated in the, you know, and you just couldn't have known it. It was an unknown, according to Donald Rumsfeld. A tail risk, on the other hand, is something that is not likely to happen, but when it does happen, it has an extraordinary amount of impact on everything.
Right. The tail risks are known, but they're just not likely.
Exactly, and that's a good way to put it. Let's talk about the economy to start off, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. First of all, the good news. Here is good news. There is good news. There's good news. There's good news. And there's also risks, and risks right now. I'm reading from the Beaulieu brothers. We haven't talked about them in some time, Brian Beaulieu. And essentially, I'm looking at their latest, the October forecast. They're still saying some likelihood of a recession in certain parts of the economy this year. Now, keep in mind, they will not and cannot forecast a tail risk. A tail risk is something that by definition happens. It's out of the ordinary. It's not anticipatable, and you can't factor that in. Even though I think that the war situation with Israel after, not before the election, everything I've read has said that under the table, if you will, the Biden and Netanyahu have agreed not to accelerate into a major war prior to the election in November. Netanyahu has not said what he will do after that. But he has said, yes, I won't be throwing nukes around, which obviously he wouldn't want to do that anyway. But he's Netanyahu is on the warpath. He has, according to the latest, one of our analysts is from Alpine Macro, basically Kaplan. He's one of the top experts on the Middle East in the world, maybe the top expert in the world. He's written 20-some-odd books about the Middle East. And he basically said here, he said, hey, look, this is not going to be an easy war. On a scale of 1 to 10, Hamas's strength prior to what happened recently before they attacked Israel was about a 7. He said, now Hamas is about a 1. Israel has just essentially decimated them. They're not eradicated because they'll never be eradicated, but they've gone from a 7 to 1. Now they're focusing on Hezbollah. And they know that the root cause of the whole thing, the head of the snake, is Iran. However, and Netanyahu is not afraid to do something, whether the U.S. likes it or not, but he has apparently, according to reports, and that's all I can say is reports, quote unquote, they said he's not going to do anything radical before the election. November, what, 6th? November 5th is the election, I think. So November 6th, all bets are off. Wait, no, no. But we also know that Netanyahu doesn't give a rip about what the United States thinks about this. He's going to take care of his country first. We also know that his popularity has been surging. Prior to all this stuff happening, Netanyahu's popularity was the pits. I think he was about a 30% approval rating, if I remember correctly.
Like a U.S. president.
That's right. And now it's like 80% or so. So his handling of this bashing by the enemies in the Middle East has won accolades and loyalty from all his people. But let's look at, first of all, the positives. Now, barring something unusual happening, barring a black swan of some sort, or a tail risk, if you want to use that term, the Beaulieu brothers, and again, we have to give, one of the things that's dangerous on radio, folks, is getting too locked in and too dogmatic in one point of view. And I can do that sometimes. I think just about anybody can. But especially if you're a driving choleric type personality like me. Anyway, according to the latest thing from ITR Insider, they said right now, most of the stuff they have is still in slowing phase, a little bit into recession this year, but they said the back of this business cycle, back meaning the end, the tail end of the business cycle before it goes back into the next phase, which would be an acceleration up, the back end of this business cycle has been exceptionally mild for U.S. industrial production. Now, you can list the reasons why. We know the fact of the matter is we had the excess savings from COVID. The fact of the matter is we had all these things that all the supplements, all the bonus checks from the government, all these things that were designed. Never in the history of the United States that I'm aware of have they had an enormous amount of stimulus pumped into the system by the economy when the Democrats had control of the House, Senate, and you know the presidency all at once, Biden's first 2 years. Something like 7% of GDP was pumped into the economy while you're in a recovery. Never happened before. You've had enormous stimulus come in from the government when you're in a recession. Mm-hmm. But we were already out of the recession by the time this started, and by the time they pumped it all in at the last minute, of course, as Senator Everett Dirksen said, a billion here and a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about some real money, right? Only in this case, it would now be a trillion here and a trillion there, and pretty soon you're talking about some real money. Bottom line is, in the short run, it appears to have worked. Now, don't worry about the national debt blowing up at some point in time down the road. That's irrelevant. No, it's not irrelevant. That is a very relevant topic. It's just not a now topic. It's something that probably comes back to bite us late this decade, or probably most likely in the 2030s. But that's a topic for another show altogether. Anyway, so the core dashboard, if you will, for the insiders, the Bolio brothers, they said, the back of this business cycle, meaning the downside of it, has been exceptionally mild for U.S. industrial production, which is characterized by the 12-12 plateau. You don't have to worry about how they do their calculations. It's a mild decline. They said, we adjusted our forecast for U.S. industrial production to reflect the expectation that growth in 2025 and 26 will look more like a mild step up in activity. Okay, so here, picture this. So what happens is, if you go into a recession and you have a crash of some sort, when everybody senses that the recession's over, the market's hit its bottom and it turns back up, you have a rebound effect. Kind of like you go to Mavericks game or whatever basketball, and they have the mascot that bounces off the trampoline. And, okay, this guy may be 5 foot two, but if he bounces on the trampoline high enough, he can dunk the ball, right? Okay, so when you have a recession, then the rebound is very strong. When you have, at this point, no recession, which we haven't had yet, still doesn't mean we can't have it in the first half of next year, but there's not going to be this giant rebound off of there. The guy runs up and the trampoline's gone. What am I going to do? I'll try to throw the ball through the net, but I'm only 5 foot two and I can't dunk it anymore. So the bottom line is, he said the expectation that growth in 2025 and 2026 will look like a mild step up in activity. Okay, so we're going to cover the positives and the negatives today on this show, because you need to hear both. So essentially, if there is no shock to the system, which I still think there will be, it will look more like a mild setup in activity from current elevated levels rather than a bounce back after a typical contraction. So that's what the Bolio brothers, which have the number one forecasting track record in the country, by the way, for 15 consecutive years. But at the same time, they will absolutely tell you we cannot forecast a, quote, tail risk. So we're changing our vernacular here, folks, from a black swan to a tail risk. What's the difference? Only an academic would care, you know. Michael cares. But anyway, the bottom line is
staring at me.
A black swan is something that is unforecastable. You cannot see it coming in advance. As Donald Rumsfeld said in his dissertation before Congress, it is an unknown unknown. And so, again, the black swan potential is no longer a black swan. I'll just read quickly from Macro Calm and Energy Tail Risk by U.S. Themes and Strategies. This is Alpine Macro, October 14th. They said, a perfect macro landing remains our baseline forecast right now. Okay, perfect landing. No recession, no bounce. The biggest tail risk is a violent oil price shock. It would no longer be called the black swan because of the media coverage. Okay, now, Mr. Statistician, have we satisfied you with the perfect definition?
Now, I will say, on your basketball illustration,
yeah,
I just keep thinking of Spud Webb getting up there and dunking that ball.
Oh, yeah, he was good enough to do that.
He was 5'7", but he could get up there.
He could. It's pretty amazing. All right, so before we get off this topic, though, we need to have a little fun on this show. So I'm going to read you some quotes. Again, we made fun of the numbers for last month. We're going to see, you won't know for 2-3, maybe in 6 months, how reliable the labor numbers were for last month. And I don't want to belabor the point, but it is sort of fun if you look at it in reality time. He said, this is from Peter Berezin, probably the top forecaster that Bank Credit Analyst has. He said, we are reluctant to crack open the champagne. He said, the September jobs report helped cement the consensus view the economy is headed for a soft landing. But he said, we're reluctant to crack open the champagne. However, enough oddities in both the payroll and household surveys, both of them, to suggest that September's gains might be reversed. And under the heading, things that make you go, okay, would that be interesting? He said, first of all, rather curious seasonal adjustments to the non-farm payrolls. That's the big corporation. The seasonal factor for September 2024 was the highest on record. When we talked about that last time, going back. Mm-hmm. This only goes back to 1939. I mean, that's a small sample size, don't you think, Mr. Statistician? Is that? No.
That's
not
big.
A small sample size. That's a big sample size.
That's a lot of months.
All the way back to 1935. What, 12 times 80 year, whatever it is, I don't know. He said, but the seasonal adjustment issue may have affected the September. This seasonal adjustment issue may have afflicted the September ADP report as well. On a raw, seasonally unadjusted basis, ADP, which is private payrolls, fell by a mere 260,000.
Fell.
That's, which direction is that? It's down. If you drop a shot put, it's not going to go up. A shot put will go down, and if get your foot out of the way. I used to throw the shot put in high school and college. Anyway, this is the worst September in the 15-year history of the survey. But we know it had to be 254,000 jobs gained right before the election. What a coincidence. The household survey also, see, this didn't come out last week even. They dug deeper into the details on the household survey. So you have the payroll survey, which is big corporations. Mm-hmm. Then you have the household survey. Household survey, they call 60,000 households and ask them, does anybody have a job, et cetera. Also had its fair share of oddities. Government employment surged 785,000 on a seasonally adjusted basis. The key word is seasonally adjusted basis. Soared 785,000. Now, the household survey has been consistently reporting bad results for at least 1 year. Occasional small bounces, but most of the time down. Mm-hmm. Most of the time down, 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 and further down. But did that matter? No, because it had an amazing surge by government employees. Government employees? Who do they work for? Do they work for the current regime? I don't know. I'll let you think about that. 785,000 new jobs on a seasonally adjusted basis. More than 100% of the total increase in employment. Employment amongst 16 to 19-year-olds soared by 231,000. Now, presumably, not many teenagers have government jobs, which implies the prime age private sector employment contracted in September. Really? Now, if you look at where we are in the cycle, it looks like we're pretty close to the point where it turns. They point out that both payrolls and unemployment rate usually hold up well right until the point where the recession starts. What about other surveys? What about private surveys not controlled by the government? The JOLTS survey, estimate of layoffs, WARN notices, and layoff announcements compiled by Challenger Gray and Christmas, it's a big firm, very reliable, are all low. However, it's important to remember that companies usually stop hiring before they start firing. So in other words, they didn't show a massive drop, but they just showed that it's all low. And I'm looking at the final chart, which I'll make a comment on, which is the unemployment rate, they said in this one from Peter Berezin, they said that the title of this is Has the Labor Market Turned the Corner? The unemployment rate rarely moves sideways. Will this time be different? Okay, so I went back and looked from 1948 to today. And I said from 1948, once the unemployment rate begins to accelerate up, there's been 12 business cycles when the unemployment rate has begun to accelerate up. What percentage? Drum roll, please. Let's get some music from Jeopardy. Michael Williams, you are up. How many times out of the 12 times that the unemployment rate has started to accelerate have we had a recession?
All 12.
How did you know that answer?
Because I read.
Yeah, you read it. So we've had a mere 12 out of 12 times. Will this one be different? Could this 13th time, when the unemployment rate has clearly bottomed, if you could see this chart, it would be great. The unemployment has clearly bottomed and is starting, the jobs unemployment rate is starting to rise. The 13th time will be the exception to the rule. We know that without doubt, correct? Oh, but it's not an election year. Is it possible that anyone could fudge these numbers in any way, shape, or form? Well, I'll let you be the judge because it just burns my hide. Well, I don't believe it. I'm sorry. I just don't believe it. I ought to believe it. You're not supposed to challenge the authorities in our country, you know, but I don't buy it. It's not just a little exception, folks. It is an enormous exception, not small. We're not talking just a few jobs here or there. We're talking, you know, 500,000 jobs swing based on the stats we had last time. Okay, so.
And I would say, though.
You got me riled up again, Michael. It's your fault. This is your fault.
Even if we don't go down the conspiracy route.
True.
Right? There is statistical problems.
Oh, yeah.
Because since COVID, seasonal adjustment has been completely out of whack.
I will give
on
you
all
that.
Of them.
I will give
also,
you that.
Since COVID, the response rate to both those surveys
yes.
has dropped dramatically.
That would be true.
When your response rate drops dramatically, you're more likely to get biases in your data. You're
okay.
more likely to get certain groups that want to respond and certain groups that just don't want to respond anymore.
I'm glad that you brought all that out.
So statistically, even if you take the conspiracy part out of it,
right.
there's still statistical issues with the studies.
Which I agree with, 100%. I am very skeptical it would make a 500,000 job difference.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not
right.
there.
No,
but I'm
but
saying
there,
even
there
if you just took all that
oddity.
Out.
There is some oddity, there's no doubt about it. So let's go back to what we talked about last week, which was a black swan event. Now, again, we're going to use the textbook definition of black swan because Michael is a statistics professor, or used to be. Anyway, I'm talking about, this is from Alpine Macro, U.S. Themes and Strategies. The title of it is Macro Calm, C-A-L-M, Calm and Energy Tail Risks. Now, I'm looking through the charts here, and I'm saying, okay, they said, well, first of all, a perfect macro landing remains our baseline forecast. So now I know for a fact, Alpine's grown. They're up to about 12, 13 strategists, and about 50-50. About half of them are recession, saying recession's coming, and about half of them are saying soft landing.
And I would say their base case is still soft landing, but they've
right.
increased the risk of it not being a soft
That's
landing.
That's a good point. All right. So the biggest tail risk, though, is a violent oil price spike. That would no longer be a black swan given the media coverage. That takes care of the stats part. You know, okay, so it's only a black swan if it's unknown. Whereas in this case, there's been a lot of media coverage, so it wouldn't qualify there, but it would still be what we call a tail risk. Now, if you don't remember statistics from college,
shame on you.
There's a bell-shaped curve, and down at the tail end of each end is, you know, maybe 5% or whatever, the last 5%, that's the tail risk.
Yeah, the either side of you got that big bell-shaped curve. The ends are called tails because they look like little tails, and they're
yep.
just small. That's why it's a small likelihood you're
that's
out
right.
there.
So chart number one, they show forecast for quarter three, real GDP growth keeps being revised upward in both Atlanta and New York. So if we're going to be fair and balanced on today's show, we have to say clearly the GDP growth for Q3 looks like it's going to be higher again. It's not going to be going down yet. And I don't think it's going to go down a lot unless we do have a tail risk happen. I said, nevertheless, a period of, quote, macro calm is far more likely than an economic acceleration and or rebound. Which would cause wage and price inflation. We define a macro calm as neither an economic boom nor a recession. Wage and price inflation not far from 2%. Kind of like Goldilocks. Just right. Not too hot. Not too cold. However, you knew there had to be a however, huh? Mm-hmm. Right? On my show, it had to be a however. However, now, so again, all of this could work out and everything could work just perfectly. However, by looking at the macro leading indicators, now they said many of these incorrectly forecast a recession last year. We give them that. Historically, though, indicators such as the NFIB, which is small businesses, NAHB, which is home builders, those surveys have been historically excellent recession predictors. The question is, were they all wrong this time or not? The answer is, we will find out mm-hmm. soon. We won't know. When I look at the leading index of economic indicators from the conference board, it's still below zero. It's still in a recession. But it's leading indicators. And we've gone over this ad infinitum, but one of our top EPB talks about how the leading indicators have been negative for so long. Now the coincident indicators have turned down, but the other indicators that are the current economy have not turned down yet. So we will see if they do. Either they do or we have a soft landing. All right, financial system indicators. By the way, the Small Business Optimism Index is in recessionary territory. The leading economic indicators is in recessionary territory. And the housing market indicator is in recessionary territory. temporary help services is in recessionary territory. Here's two things that are not. Now, if we get through this as a soft landing without a recession, the money supply is leading its way back up. So if you look at M2 money supply and bank credit, they both went down enough for a normal recession, and now they've turned back up and are leading their way back up. This would be the only thing right now that I see that indicates that maybe I'm wrong and maybe this is not going to be a tail risk because the money supply is coming back up. 90-day delinquency rates on credit cards and autos are still in recessionary territory. And bottom line is, are we going to have a black swan? No. Are we going to have a tail risk? We'll see. We'll talk about it back from the break.
All right, well, we'd like to take just a short pause here to remind you that to learn more about us at cornerstonereport.com, you can see information about Jerry, about myself, about our team. You can also see Jerry's previous newsletters, special reports. If you'd like the current special report, you'll need to sign up for it, and we'll send it to you through email. Again, we don't bombard you with emails. You get us basically once a week saying, hey, the recent radio show is now available on the web in case you missed it. And if there's a current special report, it'll be included in that email.
And by the way, Michael, I do want to mention something here that's not, we haven't talked really about on the show very much, and that is moving more and more into the chairman role in the company here. Part of the reason for that is, and that what that means is our client base, those of you that are listening that are clients, will have to do more of what you do with the representatives, David McCord, Beth, and Michael. And less of that will be running through me. Now, they can still come ask me. But the bottom line is I need to do more writing. And so I'm intending to try to put out another report in October. It's getting late. We're right before the election. But we need to get, I need to do at least 8 or 9 newsletters a year. So I've got one kind of percolating in my mind, but it's not quite here yet. So
yeah, that's our goal as a staff, is to free up Jerry to do more of the writing, more radio, more public speaking, which I know a lot of people have been asking, when are we going to get back to doing the public seminars? We're working on it. Yep. Of course, COVID interrupted all that, but we're getting back towards that. So again, on our website, you can sign up for the current newsletter. You can read previous newsletters. You can catch our previous radio shows, and you can sign up for a free consultation. Or if you'd like that free consultation, you're welcome to call us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 800-327-4285. Well, it's kind of amazing how much a pandemic has impacted our world.
It distorted a lot of things.
It's crazy.
It really
and even in our economy. I mean, who would have thought when we were dealing with all that? Because the focus was not the economy. The focus was making sure everybody's okay.
Yeah.
And I get that should be the focus. But coming out of it, how much it affects our economy, how much it affects the information we use to study the economy.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. And so, you know, some people give it more impact on some of this data that we're talking about. Some people give it less. But I still think we got to pay attention to it.
I think we do. And the issue is, again, the old saying in securities industry is past performance, no guarantee of future results. Mm-hmm. So you have to consider that. At the same time, I'm still, color me skeptical, color me, I'm still a bear. I reserve the right to change my opinion later, maybe in 6 months. Let's see. I think we're going to know by next March. But at the same time, when I'm looking at these tail risks and I look at where we are with them, again, nothing is infallible in our industry, folks. There's just nothing infallible. But when a large number of them all are tending to confirm the same thing, then you got to pay attention even if they're wrong. If they're wrong, it's just going to be an anomaly. You know, so again, I looked at that last chart of the unemployment rate starting to accelerate. 12 out of 12 times you've had a recession. Would this be the one anomaly? We'll see. When you look at the leading index of economic indicators, again, it's still in recessionary territory. It hasn't come into a recovery. The NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, still in recession. National Association of Home Realtors, still in recession. Temporary workers, still in recessionary territory, and temp workers happen before layoffs start. M2 has come out. M2, the money supply, so they're starting, even though the Fed on the one hand has raised rates so high, probably too high, because they always go too high, They've been pumping money in. So at one, on, you can think of it this way. Pushing on the brake is kind of like raising interest rates. You're driving your car down the road, you hit slam on the brakes. All right, in this case, it was a record slam. It was the fastest rate hikes magnitude-wise and speed-wise that we've seen since 1980 when Paul Volcker did it for the second time. But at the same time, somebody's pushing on the gas pedal because M2 is starting to accelerate and looks like it's coming out of recession, and so does bank credit. 90-day delinquencies are still in recessionary territory with auto and credit. And all of the private indicators, we went through this in great detail last week. We're not going to go into it again this week. Every single one of the private indicators or private companies that deal with the unemployment rate are saying a different story than the government indicators are. I'll let you be the judge. The point is, will we have a bear? Will we have a recession in the next 6 months? If we do, the likelihood is high that it will be a tail risk. Again, not a black swan because it's been now known. And by the way, before we run out of the time on today's show, I want to give you a latest update on gold, China, and oil because those are all important. Oil will partially be here. But let me first of all look at the stock market, then we'll jump into oil and energy. The analyst, and I'm looking from Ned Davis. Ned Davis is a, right now they're bullish. Now, the bank credit analyst, this is also strange. The bank credit analyst guys, there's 60 economists around the world in 8 different offices, are universally bearish.
Mm-hmm.
The whole house view of bank credit analysts, which has been around since 1946-ish, they're all bearish. The Alpine Macro guys are equally split. Half are bearish, half are saying soft landing. The Ned Davis guys are all saying soft landing. Wait a minute. Okay, this just shows you how confusing this current environment is because so many of the things that normally cause recession, it's just a weird environment here. But here's one of the things you do need to know. If you're looking at Q3, again, the earnings for the S&P 500 last month was a little bit more than 5%. But if you're looking at the projections for the third quarter, the analysts are still calling for 14.8% growth in the third quarter and 16.9% in the fourth quarter. I'm like, what? This is just not realistic. It's the hockey stick growth. I just don't think it's going to be there. If you look at the leaders, the FANG stocks, if you look at the leaders of this last year now, Ned Davis is projecting this, and Refinitiv is the source. Meta is projected to drop. Now, I'm talking about full year 2024 earnings per share growth and 2025. In 2025, they're still growing, but they've dropped, the growth rates dropped 34%. Amazon, the growth rates dropped 53%. Google or Alphabet dropped 20%. Nvidia dropped 86% earnings deceleration. They're still positive, but they've gone down by 86%. Would that have any impact on the Nifty 50? No, not the Nifty 50 anymore, the Magnificent Seven. Now, Tesla is bucking the trend. Tesla is looking like it's going to go through the roof. 61% gain of earnings next year. Acceleration. Microsoft and Apple are just kind of a little bit over break even. Microsoft at 5.7 growth. So slight growth of Microsoft and Apple. But Meta, Amazon, Google and Nvidia are all forecasted to have huge declines in the rate of growth, not decline in earnings, declining in rate of growth of their earnings. If there's a recession, that'll be different. But let's talk for a moment about the bullish or bearishness of the oil market. So right now, again, frequently, the oil market is kind of what starts the dominoes falling. When you have a situation where you're almost in recession, which is right kind of where we are right now, frequently what will happen is that the last domino that will kind of start the whole chain going is the oil. Now, Alpine Macro, again, their base case is this will stay under control. But they're also acknowledging, yes, but it might not stay in control.
And they're saying it's not a small risk.
No, they're saying it's not a small. Both bank credit analysts and Alpine Macro have said they would give it a 60% chance of a major acceleration.
In the war.
In the war between Israel and Iran, which again is Hezbollah is just one of their proxies. They said Israel will retaliate to Iran's latest missile attack in the next month. Now, probably not right before the election. Now, again, sources have it that Netanyahu has promised Biden he would not do this before the election. So
I always
we'll
wonder
see
if those sources actually know what they're talking about or if they're just trying to make it sound good.
I have no idea, and there's no way to know. They said severe responses from Israel. So Israel has not yet retaliated for the latest missile attack on their country, even though the Star Wars technology shot most of those missiles out of the sky. But Israel will retaliate to Iran's latest missile attack in the next month or so. Severe responses could include airstrikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, oil infrastructure, or leadership. Now, again, rumor has it that Netanyahu said we will not do any of those before the election. Rumor has it. Whether Netanyahu agrees. And again, as we talked about in the first half of the show, Netanyahu's popularity was about 30% before all this broke out. Now it's about 80%. So his whole country is behind him.
Kind of like Bush after 9/11.
Exactly, yeah. Bush went up to, what, 90-some-odd percent approval rating for a while. So they said this could spark a regional conflict and potentially draw in the United States. In this scenario, Iran's threat to close the Strait of Hormuz is a serious market risk. If I'm guessing, my best guess is I don't think they close the Straits of Hormuz. I do think there's an acceleration of the war, and that could cause a big spike in oil. The direct Israel-Iran war could nearly double oil prices, impede gas shipments from the Persian Gulf. They're saying they think it's $150 a barrel after that, major disruptive supply disruptions. So it acts as a growth on tax. Now, they've gone through, and one of the good things about this, if we do have another oil shock, is that the percentage that we're dependent on energy in the United States has gone way down. If you look at where we were in 1972, for example, energy spending was about 2.5% of the economy. Today, it's about 1% of the economy. But the issue is, if you have a spike and it goes up to 150 a barrel, then that shuts down economic activity. The consumer spending radically slows no matter what if you have a war on the television.
It'll affect companies, affects personal people. Whenever you have to spend more on energy, whether it's inside the products, transporting the products, us traveling,
so
whatever it is,
it acts like a tax on us. It's a huge, huge tax. Now, let me read you something. Now, this is a bullish setup for oil, according to Ned Davis. He said, crude oil prices fell nearly 6% in September, marking the third consecutive monthly decline, worst performing commodity for a quarter, down 15.2%. Despite a stable range over the past 2 years, supported by the 200-day moving average, crude oil hit its lowest point in 3 years on September 10th. However, what they said was this is a bullish setup for oil. Now, I can't tell you how to invest. I can't tell you what to invest in. I can't even give you hints as to what might work. But what I can tell you is that Ned Davis is saying there's a bullish setup for oil right now, which might have something to do with what's going on in the Middle East, potentially. So guess who else is calling for that? Alpine Macro. First, world oil production is rising sharply at the moment, and that means that the U.S. is a net exporter. However, Saudi Arabia is warning people that it cares about its market share. And bottom line is there could be some major fireworks in the Middle East. It could happen. Let's jump to a couple of topics we haven't talked about in a long time. I want to talk a little bit about gold, and I want to talk about China. China will be the fastest and easiest to cover. China, as we said, you know, they're the second largest economy in the world. We know that. We know that their economy, a lot of it has been built over the last 15 years on construction cost. And if you remember, many of you will remember this, back in the George Bush era, 2005, 2006, 2007 time frame, it was reported at one point 70% of the world's construction cranes were in China. They built. One of our seminars that we did on oil, I showed a picture of Shanghai from 1980 and a picture of Shanghai from today, and they weren't recognizable. You could see the river in the middle hadn't changed, but the buildings on both sides, it just looked like Las Vegas in the new one versus an old industrial rundown area of South Dallas on the other side. But the bottom line is it's radical different. However, if we look at quarterly new mortgage loans for China, this is in renminbi, basically $6 trillion worth of them in, this would have been 2016, negative 1% renminbi. And so it's just the chart, which of course you can't see because it's radio, it kind of looks like Niagara Falls in the barrel. Straight down. Okay, what about nominal growth of the economy? Right now, their money supply is actually shrinking. So China is on a deflationary path right now. Mm-hmm. Xi Jinping apparently is starting, and I would emphasize the word starting, and I would say it again, starting to wake up to this fact, because they've been asleep at the switch now for 2 years, and now they're going, oh, maybe the economy is slowing down. We have a housing bubble that was world, you know, got one of the guys from Bank Credit Analysts charted the biggest housing bubbles in the history of the world.
It was Joshy, yeah.
Joshy, that's right. And three of them were in China. Higher, way higher than the Japanese bubble, way higher than California or Miami in the 2006 market. I mean, two or three times higher.
Said that they have more vacant homes that people just built than there are homes in the U.S.
That's right. It's a magnitude that we've never seen, that kind of housing bubble. Well, so is it any coincidence that they're going to, it's going to take them a while to get it under control? Mm-hmm. They're going to have to lease them out. They're going to have to almost give them away. I'm looking at the last slide here, real estate investment as a contribution to GDP growth. So this is out of the economy, economic growth to China. How much of a contributor is China in terms of their real estate investment?
Well, it used to be big.
Used to be, yeah. 2020, it was almost 25% of the economy.
That's a fourth of the economy.
One fourth was real estate investment. It's now negative 30%.
That's a big change.
That is quite the shift. So keeping you updated on some new things.
So I would just add to that. So our analysts, they all have had China special reports updating us whenever they come out with these new proposals to help their economy. They're pretty much in agreement that they say it's a good start if they were to continue and come up with more, but their government has a history of not following through.
It's not enough. You need a 50-foot tidal wave of stimulus to turn this thing around. Because, again, how many of you remember the housing bubble? How many of you remember how deep that valley was? It didn't take 1 year to get over. It didn't take 2 years to get over. It took 6 years. It took 6 years. Housing prices topped in 2006. We have this fully documented in our book, From Boom to Bust and Beyond. Housing market topped in 2006 in America and bottomed in 2012. It took that long for all the foreclosures, all the people that bought at the top, that it, we called them jingle mail. The people in California said, I'm $250,000 underpriced on this house now. The market value, I paid $1 million. Now it's worth $750. Here's the keys back, and they just stuck it in the mail slot at the mortgage company.
And in China, it's a much bigger issue, because not only did you have a huge bubble, but they don't have Social Security. And so they save a lot more. But the way they were investing those savings
in real estate
was real estate.
And a whole lot of them were big, massive apartment buildings that today no one still lives in.
So their retirement savings have gone away.
Vacant. Well, yes. All right, so let's talk about the last topic for today, and that's gold. Now, we haven't talked about gold in a very long time. Let me give you my viewpoint on gold. There are gold bugs out there. Gold bugs will tell you, what's the answer to any problem? A gold.
Buy gold.
What if you have inflation? Buy gold. What if you have deflation?
Buy gold.
Buy gold. What if inflation's low? Buy gold. What if inflation doesn't exist at all? Buy gold. What if there's a bankruptcy? Buy gold. What if there's a war? Buy gold. What if there's peace? Buy gold.
I think they sell gold.
They only sell, the guys that are the hypers only sell gold. Now, we do put people into gold, but only our clients. We don't market to the rest of the general public. So we have set up a small, this is full disclosure, small LLC, basically to handle gold investments for our existing clients. We don't go out to anybody else. We're not hyping it. We're not putting a commercial on it. It's not there. If you're not a client, you do not have access to this through us. Why did we do it that way? Because a lot of the people in the gold industry are shysters. Not all of them. Some of them are honest. Some of them are completely honest, and they mark the prices up just right. Just a fair markup. Everybody has to make a profit in the world. Mm-hmm. So a fair markup on the price is a good. What's a fair markup? Well, it depends. But the bottom line is some of them are that way. Some of them are not shysters. They just mark their prices up too high. And they typically, this is an unknown kind of thing to most people out there, they will underbid the price on gold. In other words, they may give you the lowest price on gold that you can find on the internet for a 1 ounce gold coin, American Eagle. Sometimes they sell them at a loss. Okay, well, here's your question. If they are the lowest price gold out there and they sell them at a loss, how do they stay in business? Because they mark up the silver 25% or whatever. So in other words, the people, for some reason, they shop and shop and shop the gold price. Oh, you got your 1 ounce coin is different. This one's higher than this one. That one's higher than this one. Blah, 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 blah. And they get the lowest price operator on the gold, and people don't check on the silver price. And so the silver might be marked up 25%. Or they have what are called numismatic coins. Now, I'm not opposed to numismatic coins. If you are a numismatist and you really know rare coins, more power to you. Vast majority of people are not and should not be investing in that area at all. Why? It's notorious for ripoffs. 50% markup sometimes. 100% markup. A rare coin would have to go up a heck of a lot to make up for a 100% markup by the dealer. That does happen out there. So I'm sorry if I'm giving you bad news if you've done this before, but this is something buyer beware kind of thing. So the ripoffs out there, and again, how do the ripoffs get by? It's not regulated. There are no licenses involved. There's no regulatory agencies. It's unregulated industry. So there are good guys, there are medium guys, and there are bad guys in that industry, and it's just a buyer beware type of deal. All right, so anyway, enough said on that. Here's the long-term outlook on gold. To me, it's very, very bullish. I'm looking at a chart of central bank purchases of gold, and this is from Alpine Macro. This is not from a local gold dealer. This is from a stock market analyst that we've subscribed to for years. They said central bank purchases of gold have skyrocketed. Emerging market central bank purchases have escalated unabated since 2008. What happened first? 2008 kind of rocked the world. Like, oh, before that it was like, hey, gold is an archaic asset. You know, get a pet rock or a lava lamp for the 70s. You know, we don't care. But gold is archaic. It's no longer, we're the masters of the universe, and we know that you shouldn't have any gold because gold doesn't pay dividends or interest. Well, guess what? Gold has a history of being money for all of history, as far back as history goes. 6,000 years of recorded monetary history, gold has always been the gold metal. Now, we now have central banking. Central banking, unfortunately, has the ability to spend more money than you take in, called deficit spending, which is what our government does in spades. We're only up to $35 trillion in excess spending by the federal government, which is something like $260,000 per person in the United States. But it's accelerating rapidly. Now, is gold the only solution to all problems? It's kind of like the old analogy is, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. No, we do think gold deserves a portion of a portfolio, not the whole portfolio. But here's my question to those of you out there, and this is especially for my clients that are listening today. Do you think the world over the next 10 years is going to get more stable or less stable? Good question. Do you think that China is going to be, they're not going to take over Taiwan? Good question. Do you think that Putin is going to survive and maybe getting more aggressive over time? What about North Korea?
Yeah, is Iran North and Korea, North Korea.
North Korea has decided he's going to be a pacifist. He's sworn off his warlike tendencies. He's going to give all of his missiles away to the United Nations. And kumbaya, we all live in this wonderful world of peace. Or do you think maybe we're going to have some geopolitical issues? If you haven't read The Fourth Turning, read it now. Get a used copy on the internet. The new one is, I'm still working on the new book. It's good. It's not as good, as my, in my opinion, as the original, The Fourth Turning. But anyway, you have to read that. It's headline news for today that was written in 1997. It's Jerry Tuma, Michael Williams. More with Smart Money next week.
Jerry Tuma's Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA, SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services, an independent financial group, LLC, or unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.